WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Making sure prescription drugs we take are safe, that we're not going to be poisoned by the air we breathe, the water we drink, and the food we eat, that there's oversight for medical equipment at hospitals. Federal agencies like the FDA, EPA, and CDC oversee all of this. But a recent Supreme Court ruling could weaken the ability of these agencies to actually regulate what we depend on to live. That's because the court overturned a decades-old precedent called Chevron deference, which allowed courts to defer to the advice of the experts at federal agencies rather than judges. So how will this decision affect our health? To find out, I sat with two professors from the University of Chicago. Jonathan Macer is a professor of law, and Betsy Cliff is a professor of public health. I started off by asking about the original Chevron ruling. Here's Professor Macer.
Sometimes when Congress passes a law, it's very specific about what's allowed and not allowed. Criminal law is an example of that. But sometimes it's very vague, and it leaves it for an administrative agency to fill in the gaps or to interpret what the law means. So, for instance, the Clean Air Act says that the EPA should make any rules that are appropriate and necessary to eliminate hazardous air pollutants. And so what does appropriate and necessary mean? The Chevron doctrine, which, as you said, existed for 40 years, says that the EPA gets to decide what ambiguous terms like that mean. The EPA is the expert. They can figure out what appropriate and necessary means, and that the courts should defer to the EPA's interpretation. That's why it's called Chevron deference.
Gotcha. Now, what's the difference between a regulation, which is what the Chevron concerns, and other types of laws? And why are regulations important?
Great question. So a regulation is just any type of rule made by an administrative agency like EPA, or health and safety regulations at work, like made by OSHA, or fuel economy regulations made by the Department of Transportation, as opposed to a law or a statute passed by Congress. But regulations, even though they get a lot fewer headlines than statutes, they're incredibly important to our lives. The quality of the water we drink, the quality of the air we breathe, the safety and fuel economy of the cars we drive, all of that is determined not directly by law, but by regulations passed by these agencies. So agency power to make regulations is extraordinarily important to every aspect of daily life.
And so catch us up to today. The Supreme Court relied on this case as precedent for decades until just a week or two ago. So what shifted there?
So now what the court is saying is that courts should no longer defer to agencies' interpretations of these statutes. So if EPA has some interpretation of what type of clean air rule is appropriate and necessary, the court doesn't have to defer to that interpretation anymore. The court gets to decide on its own what appropriate and necessary.
And what was the legal rationale for that decision?
So the legal rationale was that the courts are supposed to decide questions of law. And they say, interpreting a statute like this, interpreting what the words appropriate and necessary in the Clean Air Act mean, that's a question of law. And there's actually a different statute called the Administrative Procedure Act, which is sometimes thought of as a like a constitution of administrative rulemaking that says courts are supposed to interpret questions of law. So previously, when we saw ambiguous language like that in a statute, courts treated that as a question of policy. What's the best policy? And the agency's got to decide that. Now courts are going to treat it as a question of law.
All right. So, Professor Cliff, agencies experiencing weakened regulatory powers. That sounds like a bureaucratic problem until you realize that one of those agencies is the Food and Drug Administration, right? So the FDA, of course, as we know, regulates products that affect our health and our safety. So what does this ruling mean for them specifically?
Good question. So the FDA, as you just said, regulates a lot of the things that we've sort of put in or on our bodies. the FDA relies a lot on these regulations because they deal with things that are really complex,
like whether, drug approvals.
Right, like whether pharmaceutical products are safe and whether they're effective. And they also deal with a lot of sort of new technology. So one of the things that laws and regulations, you know, laws are made at a specific time, but then obviously technology advances since that time. So one of the things that regulations help us deal with is the changing technology, and that is a big thing in healthcare. So for the FDA, I think this doesn't eliminate their authority to make regulations, but I think there's a lot of uncertainty about how those regulations might be questioned or whether or not judges can come in and undermine some of those regulations.
Yeah, well, let's break down some of the things that you brought up there. The FDA boasts that it regulates 21 cents of every dollar spent in the U.S. What are these things that the FDA regulates? Like, can you give everyday examples?
Sure. I mean, it's like I said, many of the things you put in or on your body. So shampoo, moisturizer, drugs you might take, pharmaceuticals, all the way down to cigarettes and vitamin supplements and things like that.
The FDA also approves vaccines, like the COVID vaccine.
Absolutely.
Correct? Tell us about the process of, say, getting a drug approved.
Okay, so just to be clear, the process for the COVID vaccine was a little bit different than this, but the standard process would take years. In a standard process, there would be some sort of preclinical trial where, like, bench science type lab development, then they go into small clinical trials where they're figuring out if it is safe for humans to use, and they go to bigger, and finally what you may have heard of in the news, phase three clinical trials that are on hundreds or thousands of patients. And the FDA then takes all that evidence, they convene outside experts, and they those outside experts give a recommendation. Then inside the FDA, they determine whether the drug is safe and effective enough to be marketed in the U.S.
I see. So, Professor Mazur, the Chevron, as you mentioned, that precedent originated with a case concerning the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. And that's still the agency that a lot of people use as an example when they're explaining Chevron. Now that this precedent's been overturned, I mean, talk more about how the EPA will be affected here.
So it's going to narrow the EPA's sort of freedom to operate, I guess is one way to think about it. It used to be that if you had an ambiguous term like that, or a different part of the Clean Air Act uses best system of emissions reduction, then the EPA would have a lot of flexibility in deciding, well, what is the best system of emissions reduction now? Now a court is going to pick one particular meaning. And that's going to be the meaning that controls. That's going to be the legal rule. And so the agency will just have to work with that meaning. And so instead of a whole range of options, the agency might in many cases be limited to just one option.
Will this have an impact on regulation concerning climate change?
It's going to have an enormous impact on climate change regulation and lots of other things. So one way to think about this is that if Congress were a really good functional institution, it could pass laws to deal with all these sorts of problems. But we both know that a very divided Congress has not been able to pass a lot of meaningful legislation in recent years, been hard to overcome veto in the Senate.
Yeah.
And so presidents have used regulation very aggressively to go after big social problems like climate change or like air pollution more generally. President Obama, he couldn't get climate change legislation to pass through Congress, so he used regulation to try to go after climate change. And so now the EPA's ability to do the same sort of thing under President Biden is going to be reduced. Mm. But one important thing I want to mention is that this flexibility is two-sided. So Obama used the flexibility provided by Chevron to regulate, to try to curb climate change. But then when Trump took office, Trump used the flexibility provided by Chevron to undo the Obama regulations. So
that's right.
It can be used in a pro-regulatory direction by a president who believes in that, or it could certainly be used in an anti-regulatory direction as well.
Professor Cliff, the largest provider of health insurance in the U.S. is Public. Almost 70 million people are on Medicare and Medicaid, which we know are run by a federal agency. So how could programs like these be affected here?
Yeah, good question. Medicare is the one that is most directly run by the federal government. That covers seniors, so people over 65, and people with disabilities. And that is just that's very regulation heavy. Medical care is very specific in terms of the complexity of procedures, the population. And so There's a lot of concern or a lot of uncertainty around how this might impact regulations, particularly reimbursement rates, which are a constant fight for reimbursement rates for both physicians and hospitals and the medical devices that people buy. That's a constant fight, and that's governed by regulations, and that could, you know, come under increased scrutiny.
What about the CDC? Like, could this ruling put judges in charge of things like pandemic best practices? Professor Maser is nodding his head. Yes,
I think "in charge of" is a loaded term.
Okay.
I would shy away from "in charge of." I think, like Professor Maser said, this gives judges a lot more power to question those. I will say that I think that judges have been taking power to question a lot of the COVID-19 regulations even prior to this. Mm-hmm. So it's uncertain how much under different types of precedents. So I don't know how much this falling will change, but certainly the rollback of the administrative state that Chevron is a part of is, I think, you know, one thing that is making maybe agencies more tepid in terms of going aggressively to protect public health in emergencies. I think it's really remains to be seen whether agencies will continue to aggressively, create those regulations as they did at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic.
Any thoughts to add, Professor Maser?
I agree with that assessment. And one thing that Professor Cliff said that I thought was really important was she referenced the sort of general rollback of the administrative state. And that's really going on here. The Supreme Court, not just through this decision, but a lot of others, is really trying to reduce the power of these administrative agencies. And that's a big deal for all of our lives.
Professor Cliff, I want to go back to something that you mentioned earlier. There are concerns that judges, instead of experts, are going to be put in charge of regulating emerging technologies, that there's little or no existing regulatory infrastructure for, like AI or nanotechnology. What will happen in those fields?
Very good. I mean, that's a million-dollar question.
Yeah.
I don't know if I know the answer, but I do think that going back to something Professor Maser said, that, you know, government is not known for being nimble, but within that, relatively, administrative agencies can be more nimble than often Congress, which, as we know, is very divided, and the judicial system, which deliberately moves slowly. And I think when we're talking about emerging technologies, particularly in health, you know, there's emerging technologies in health all the time with genetic testing and new drugs and that kind of thing. And agencies are relying on old statutes to give them the authority, but they sometimes have to stretch those statutes. They weren't written for these new technologies. And so their ability to do that might be hampered.
And so we're all on the same page here, Professor Maser. I mean, it's a complicated ruling because it doesn't quite make a change as much as it opens the door to potential change, as you alluded to earlier. So how exactly will those changes happen?
So the court doesn't actually say that any of the existing rules are unlawful now. It just says that the interpretations that agencies relied on when they made those rules
could
be wrong. So what we're probably going to see now is a flurry of additional lawsuits challenging old existing rules or trying to block new rules, lawsuits brought by Chamber of Commerce, Business Roundtable, coal companies, et cetera. And we'll have to see how those lawsuits play out in the courts. The Supreme Court said in its opinion they were not trying to say that all those old rules were invalid, but you know, if you read the writing on the wall, there's reason to be concerned.
So are lawsuits about regulatory minutia going to go all the way to the Supreme Court? Is that what you're saying? And would the Supreme Court entertain them?
Some of them might go all the way to the Supreme Court. A lot of them will probably be decided by the lower courts before they get there. But there are going to be a lot of new statutory interpretation questions, because previously you had these statutes with this ambiguous language and the courts didn't need to decide what it definitively meant. They could just say, well, the agency's interpretation is reasonable. Now they have to definitively decide. And some of those questions might be really hard and might go all the way to the Supreme Court.
So is it the best use of the High Court's time, you think, to be writing regulations for every federal agency?
It's definitely not the best use of their time, but even more important than their time, it's not the best alternative for the rest of us. Instead of agencies, which are staffed by experts and scientists and engineers who really know what they're doing and are best positioned to try to protect us from harmful pollutants, we're going to have Supreme Court justices consulting dictionaries to figure out what these statutes mean. And the result is probably going to be worse and weaker and less efficient regulation and bad news for everyone who wants to breathe air or drink water.
Oh my goodness. On the flip side, I mean, how are these agencies now going to spend their time?
Well, I think previously policymaking in these agencies was very much driven by the scientific experts. They would say, here's what we think is the best policy. The economists would help contribute to that. And then they would go to the lawyers and the lawyers would tell them whether that seemed within the bounds of what they could get a court to accept. Now, unfortunately, the lawyers are probably going to take the lead and say, here's what we think a court will tell us we have to do. So let's try to preemptively do it. And that's, even as a lawyer, I would say that's unfortunate when shifting power away from the scientists and towards the lawyers.
Before I let you both go, I want you each to sort of give me the most important takeaway that you think our listeners should grab from this conversation. You first, Professor Maser.
Agencies' ability to deal with new and emerging problems is going to become much weaker. So climate change is a great example. People weren't thinking about regulating climate change 4 decades ago, but we certainly are now. Mm-hmm. And whatever the next problem that comes down the road is, it's going to be much harder to figure out a way to address that problem under the statutes we have. So either Congress steps up or we're going to be in big trouble.
What should we keep in mind, Professor Cliff?
Yeah, from a public health standpoint, I think that we should keep in mind that this is going to make public health regulations and directives much more complicated and much weaker and harder to interpret.
We've been speaking with Betsy Cliff, a professor of public health at the University of Chicago, and with Jonathan Maser, law professor at the university. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Jules Yeager, edited by Meha Ahmed, and mixed by Micah Yasin. Are you interested in more conversations about health? Well, you can leave us a message at 888-915-9945 with your suggestions of what to talk about next. That's 888-915-9945. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again this afternoon.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBEZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely